98-year-old Holocaust survivor Lily Ebert has become a TikTok sensation. Hundreds of videos, millions of likes and followers. Since her 18-year-old great-grandson, Dov Foreman, began documenting her experience at the hands of the Nazis in World War II.
I arrived with my family, with my mother, with my brother, and with my three younger sisters. Most of my family really survived. It happened so quick that we could not say even a word to them. We were in a situation, not today, it is very difficult even to understand it. I have to explain the unexplainable.
And that's Lily Ebert. She's one of the very few survivors of the Holocaust still alive. They've also, she and her great-grandson, Dov, written a book called Lily's Promise, referring to the pledge she made to tell the world of the atrocities after her mother and siblings were murdered in Auschwitz. She has been doing that for decades now, and her great-grandson, Dov, have given her a new TikTok audience. I asked him what prompted him to do this in the first place.
So it all started in lockdown when I was really for the first time in my life separated from my great-grandmother, who at the time was around 96 years old. And it really struck something inside of me, and it made me realise that unfortunately Holocaust survivors and my great-grandmother are not going to live for much longer. And this really is the last moment to capture their stories and to preserve them not only for us, but for future generations to come too. And the late chief rabbi from the United Kingdom, Lord Sacks, says that it's our responsibility to transform history from history, a story which is his story, to memory, something which is our collective memory as a human, as human kinds, but also something which we can internalize and understand. And I thought that the way to do that was to show people the human voice, an eyewitness from the Holocaust. And so I took to social media, originally Twitter and then to TikTok, to share my incredible great-grandmother's incredibly harrowing Holocaust testimony. And I was really shocked at the response. And we're still continually blown away by the response that we've had on social media. And to see millions, hundreds of millions of people learning from my great-grandmother every single day, it's just absolutely incredible.
Was it your experience that your generation really knew very, very little about what had happened during the Holocaust?
So I feel that I'm actually incredibly lucky that I've been able to meet so many different Holocaust survivors throughout my life, and also to have learned from my great-grandmother. But I've definitely seen that many people do not know the story of the Holocaust and have never met a Holocaust survivor. I know that I'm in a unique position to have grown up and spent so much time with Holocaust survivors, and especially having my great-grandmother as someone who survived Auschwitz. I think that's an incredibly unique and rare position. And I've learned so much from my great-grandmother, so I do feel a responsibility to share that with so many millions of people across the world who haven't heard these stories, because there is so much that we can learn and that we have to learn, not only from my great-grandmother, but from the countless Holocaust survivors, but also, unfortunately, those who are not able to speak and those who did not survive. And it's those stories which we have to remember and those stories which we have to learn from.
So it was a lockdown project. Does that mean you spent lockdown with your SAFTA?
So the first lockdown, we were not together. But after that, my great-grandmother moved in with us, and we spent a lot of time together. And it really made me appreciate not only the time that we spend together, but also life in general, because spending so much time with my great-grandmother and living with her, it was really, firstly, something that I'll never forget. And these memories I will always remember with her. But also, it was just incredibly special to every day being able to learn from her. Small things that people might not realise, but on a daily basis, which when living with her, I really was able to try and internalise and take in. Things like appreciating family, appreciating the smallest things when you wake up in the morning just to say thank you. And those are things that I've learned from her and that I learned from her when living with her.
The videos on TikTok are shocking, of course, but also they show her love of life, which comes through not only there, but also in the book. She never lost her zest for life. And still hasn't, presumably.
Yes, she definitely hasn't. I mean, one thing which strikes so many people when they meet her is how happy she is and that she always has a smile on her face. She loves life. And I think that's something which always strikes people and which makes her so radiant. And I think that's what attracts so many people to our TikTok account. Because one thing we wanted to show when we set up the TikTok account is not only for people to learn from the Holocaust and the lessons and from my great grandmother, but we also wanted people to see that no matter how dark the days are, no matter how dark times are and how bad things might be for you, hopefully brighter days will come, because you can see my great grandmother, who is really in the hell on earth, Auschwitz-Birkenau, where hundreds of members of her family were murdered, some even in front of her own eyes. And the fact that she was able to come from that and see the light and see better days, I think gives hope to everyone. And perhaps that's why so many people have been attracted to our story and been attracted to our TikTok account.
There's a tiny gold pendant that she talks about, which somehow, along with a couple of rings, she and her sisters managed to secrete all the way through those dark times in Auschwitz and in the other camps. Does she still wear that pendant?
Yes, she wears the pendant which survived Auschwitz together with her every single day. We believe as a family, and I've spoken to countless historians and people at the Auschwitz Museum and at Yad Vashem and a few other Holocaust museums, that this is the only gold and perhaps also necklace to have survived Auschwitz with its original owner. So it's an incredible piece of history, but also something which means so much to my great-grandmother, as one of the only possessions that she still has from her childhood, from before the war. And she wears it every day. She treasures it. And we try to preserve it as much as possible, because it really is, as I said, a unique and rare piece of history.
You had to undertake some detective work in the process of excavating, if you like, your great-grandmother's history. And one of them concerns a banknote that you found, I think, in her possessions.
Yes. So when my great-grandmother, when the first lockdown was coming to an end, I asked my great-grandmother to show me some tangible things which I could share with the world on social media to try and get her story out there and to try and allow a few people. I never thought that we would get a large response, but just even I thought maybe 10, 20, in maybe in the low hundreds, to allow some people to listen to her story and to learn from it. And I asked her to show me some things, and she showed me a banknote which was hidden away at the back of a cabinet in her lounge. And this banknote was given to her from an American Jewish liberator upon liberation from the death march in April 1945. And on this banknote, this American liberator had written 10 words: "The start to a new life, good luck and happiness." And when I saw this banknote, it really struck me as for a number of reasons. Firstly, my great-grandmother had kept it in such pristine condition for 75 years at the time. So obviously I realised that it was really special and really meaningful for her. And secondly, it made me realise that I'd never really learnt about the kindness that the liberators showed to the survivors and how they helped them return to humanity in some sense of it. And so I decided to share this banknote with the world. And I remember joking with my great-grandmother before I posted the banknote that I would be able to find the liberator within 24 hours. And lo and behold, we found the American soldier. Unfortunately, he passed away, but his family within 8 hours. And what was really incredible about this search was that he hadn't written his name on the banknote. He had only written his position in the army. And so really it turned into an international hunt to find this mystery soldier. And as I said, within 8 hours, over 2 million people had been involved in the search, and we had managed to find him. That was a moment for me, a turning point, when I realised that I have a voice and I have a platform and I can harness social media and my voice for good.
A lot of her story nobody knew about for years. In fact, in your book, she says that she never spoke of it to her children, your grandparents, and she never wanted to burden them with it. But they were raised with a certain sense of loss. Did you ever talk to your grandparents about how they felt about their mother's story?
Interestingly, my grandmother is actually a psychologist who deals with trauma. So I guess we definitely do discuss it a lot in the family because of her experience then and also now her job. And she definitely equates the two as to why she went into that field. And she speaks about it and how it's affected her and the trauma that's been passed down. And I think it's something that you can see with many families that have Holocaust survivors in them, whether it be parents, grandparents, even great-grandparents. You can see those effects. And there's something in psychology called generational trauma, and that definitely is the case with the Holocaust survivors and their families. And one thing which is important to note here is that what this shows us is that the Holocaust did not finish in 1945. Many people think that the Holocaust and its effects went away with liberation. My great-grandmother was liberated in April 1945. That's definitely not the case. In the book, my great-grandmother speaks about really how that was just the beginning. That's when she really realised what happened to her, that she had lost her mother, her younger brother, her younger sister, and hundreds of members of her family, cousins, uncles, aunties. She had nowhere to go. She was in a foreign country with a foreign language, without possessions, without money. And I think that's when it really started. And that's what's important to note, that the Holocaust did not finish in 1945. In fact, its effects are still affecting the Jewish community still today. And I think that's really important for other people to realise.
And the other point that you make, certainly in the book, is that in many ways, the Holocaust didn't start during World War II. Its roots extended way beyond that. I mean, your great-grandmother was in Hungary. And slowly, even though Jews considered themselves loyal Hungarians, they lost the right to vote. And then they lost the right to own land and property. And then they lost the right to live there. And yet, she says in the book, Jews continued to proclaim their unswerving loyalty to their fatherland. And even right up until, you know, being on the wagons, going to Auschwitz-Birkenau, they would tell themselves that this could not be as bad as it looked. Something good would come of it. And that's a warning to the world, really, I suppose, that things start and grow very incrementally in many ways.
Yes, 100%. And I think there are so many lessons that we can learn from that. And one of them, especially for me as a member of the young generation, and one message that I would want to teach the younger generation from this, we must never let our guard down. Wherever we see hatred, no matter who it's directed towards, we must always stand up and speak out and say this is not okay, because we must understand that the Holocaust, the gas chambers of Auschwitz-Birkenau, the killing did not start, as you say, with the Holocaust. It started way before with words and with simple actions. And wherever we see these actions in society, we have to realise that it's not okay, and we have to use our platforms, we have to use our voices to speak out and to try and make a change in the world.
Are you seeing denialists responding to your TikTok videos?
Unfortunately, we are. Actually, the UN and UNESCO just released a report which I worked closely with, which says that on social media, almost 20% of all posts related to the Holocaust are either denying or distorting the Holocaust. And I think that's really an incredibly shocking statistic. But I think a lot of this comes from a place of ignorance amongst younger people on social media. They might see a joke or they might see a meme on social media of the Holocaust, and they might not really know what the Holocaust is. And I think that's why it's so important that people like myself and my great-grandmother and many other educators come onto social media and go to a platform where there are younger people to educate them before they see this dangerous and anti-Semitic hatred and denial and distortion. And I try not to give these people too much thought and too much emphasis. I really don't like talking about the deniers and the distorters of the Holocaust, because that's what they want. That would be them winning if we focus on them. I think I just like to carry on with my own work, and it only makes me stronger and only emphasizes the need to do what I do, to go out there, to go around, to go across the world to talk about this story. And it really, really is so important. And we can see how important it is by the level of Holocaust denial and distortion that there is in the world.
So Lily did not speak about her experience for quite some time. What made her begin to speak out?
I think that's a question for her, but as she's not here, my answer to that would be, firstly, a fear of these stories being forgotten. Secondly, the fact that she, at a certain point, she realised that her family already knew. And so she was no longer afraid as such of hurting them with this story, even though they already knew. She speaks about that in great lengths in the book, of how she didn't speak out because she didn't want to harm her children. But in actual fact, her children already knew. They felt that pain. They felt that trauma. And I think those two combined, the fact that she didn't want her story to be forgotten, but also that she then realised that her family already knew, perhaps that's why she started to speak out.
I think in 1988, she returned to Auschwitz, interestingly, with her grandchildren, not with her children. And she was able to speak about her experience to you and to her grandchildren, your parent, because her audience, in a way, freed her up in a way that her children did not.
Yes, for sure. My mother was a part of that group when my great-grandmother returned to Auschwitz, and my mother always speaks about it and how deeply emotional, but also how incredible it was to go with my great-grandmother on her first trip back and how special that was. And I think to see someone going back to the hell where they saw their family being murdered is definitely not something that's easy, but also probably something which is quite incredible to see my great-grandmother return. And she speaks about it with mixed emotions. Obviously, she went back to pay respects, but also to show the Nazis that they did not survive. They are no longer here, but she is, and she's able to go back. And she's not only able to take her children's generation back, but she was able to take her grandchildren back. And I think that's something which was very special to her and something which she speaks about greatly in the book, and also a lot now when people ask her about her trips back. She speaks about how proud she is that she could go back with her grandchildren. And on that point of how she was more comfortable speaking to my generation and my parents' generation, I think that was because we are further detached. And again, it goes back to that pain. She doesn't want to hurt us, but she realises that we're further detached from it. So we probably feel less pain. And I think that's why she feels more comfortable speaking with us.
When did you first see the tattoo on her arm?
So it's a moment, actually, which weirdly sticks out in my brain as something very strong, even though it was so long ago. I say so long ago, not so long ago, but relative to how old I am, so long ago. And I speak about it in the book, and it was one Friday night when a friend of mine who's a year older than me had just learnt about Auschwitz in school, and he came over. I was in year 5 or year 6, and he was the year older than me. So I would have been about 9 or 10 or 11. And he came round and he asked to see my great-grandmother's tattoo, and I was shocked because I had never seen her tattoo, and I would never dreamt of asking such a question, because it was a taboo in our family. Even though we spoke about the Holocaust and she had told me her story, we would never have dreamt of asking her questions. It was what she wanted to give to us, and especially not questions about the tattoo. It was just something that was not spoken about for some reason. And that was the first time I remember her slowly lifting up her left sleeve and reading out her number, A10572. And it's a permanent reminder and a permanent mark of the Nazis' crimes against humanity, and something which every day when she looks at it probably reminds her of those crimes against humanity and the time that she went through.
I should ask you how Lily is now. I know that she got COVID and she got pretty sick with it.
Yes, so last year she got COVID, but thank God she recovered then. And then a few months ago, or now probably 2 months ago about, she fell over and broke her hip and was in hospital for 8 weeks. Thank God she's back home and she's walking again and she's back to 100%, which is really incredible. But we're trying to not make her too tired and just taking it slowly again. But she really is incredible. She's a walking miracle. She's a walking survivor and a walking fighter. And we're so lucky, I think, to have someone like that in our generation to educate and to share her wisdom.
Do you think that this has given you a path in life? I mean, how old are you? You're still only 18 or 19 now?
I'm 18.
I mean, you're ridiculously articulate, if you don't mind me saying so. And this has taken up a lot of space in your life for love, yes, but also duty. How do you see your future?
Well, I'm going to answer this in two ways. Firstly, it has taken up a lot of time. The past 3 years of my life have been spent on TV, on radio, writing, on TikTok, on social media, sharing this story. But it's definitely not a burden, and it is a responsibility, but it's not something that I feel burdened by. And yes, it's taken up time, but the time has flown by, and that's because it's a duty which I feel, firstly, immense gratitude to my great-grandmother for entrusting me with this duty and entrusting me with her story. But also it's something which I feel so passionate about. I wouldn't do it if I didn't feel passionate about it. It's not something that's easy to talk about, the Holocaust. It's a tough subject to talk about, but also to spend so much time doing it as a young person when I could so easily have spent time in lockdown on my phone and playing video games. It's not easy to have done what I've done, but it's something which I feel, firstly, as I said, immense gratitude for, but something which is incredibly important. And I'm not sure where the future will take me. I think it was Steve Jobs in a talk that I watched recently said that it's hard to connect the dots 10 years going forwards. But once you get to that point in 10 years, you'll be able to look back and see those dots connected and realise why you chose those stocks then. And it's hard to look forward and see what's going to happen. There's a lot of exciting things and a lot of exciting and interesting people that I meet and exciting things that I get to go to, conferences, talking to hundreds, maybe even thousands of people, going on radio, television, and it's really opened many doors for me. But one thing is for sure, even if it's not a career path of mine, I'll continue forever and as long as I can to share my great grandmother's important story and to stand up not only for the Jewish community, but for change throughout the world, for positive change, and also to encourage other younger people to take the same leap and to take the same steps that I have, not to be afraid and not to let other people to tell you that young people don't have a seat at the table and that young people don't have a voice, because we definitely do, and we can use our skills for a much better way than people think. And I think that if we only realise that and young people only realise the power that we have and the change that we can create, then I think the world would be a much better place, because I've seen single-handedly the power that one young person at the time I was 16 can have on the world. I've worked with numerous governments and I've worked with the United Nations and many other international organisations to actually create policy change and to create change in the world, and other young people can do it too. Really, all you have to do is get up and make change and want to use your voice, and it is a hard thing and it does take time, but I promise you people will stick up for you, people will be proud of you, and people will help you. And I think one thing which has surprised me so much is the level of support and help that I've had from probably hundreds of thousands of people across the world reaching out to me, asking if I need any help, reaching out with contacts. And I think that's something which I'll forever be grateful for, but also something which I can turn to other young people with and show them that people will help you and that you don't need to be afraid and that you can make a change.
It's dark stuff though, Dove, and I don't know, I worry about you because you're so young taking all this on.
Thank you, but I firstly, I have a great team of people around me helping whenever I need, a great network of people, and it's really a collaborative effort, so it's not only me, but I think that it's really something which I feel passionate for and something which I don't feel it as a burden. I take it as a responsibility, but it's something which I'm proud to do, and I'm thankful that I'm able to do it.
Have you always been the closest to Lily in terms of her family?
I'm not really sure that's the truth, but what is certain is that this period over the last 3 years has made us incredibly close, and spending almost every day with her now for the past 3 years has been so special and something which I will always be grateful for and something which I'll always remember. I mean, the memories that we have going to incredible places, meeting incredible people and achieving incredible things it's something which I'll never forget, and something which has definitely made us incredibly close, not only because of the nature of the subject and the questions which I have to ask her, but also just because of the fun that we've had together doing it.
And there seems to be nothing that she's not prepared to talk about.
Yeah, I think she's incredibly brave, and she always says at the beginning of interviews, she says to the reporter, please don't be scared to ask me. There's nothing that's off limits, nothing off bounds. And she says, if I'm not prepared to answer it, I'll tell you on the spot, but don't be scared to ask any specific questions, because she doesn't want there to be a time when there are no Holocaust survivors around and people to have said, I wish I could have asked that question, or I wish I could have said this to Lily when I met her. And she's really, she advocates for that a lot, that people shouldn't be scared. People should ask the questions that they want answered.
There must have been something that's come out in those Ask Me Anything sessions that shocked even you.
It's hard for me to pinpoint a specific question because of the volume and the amount of questions that we get, not only from reporters, but also individuals on TikTok and Twitter and different social media platforms. But there definitely has been times when I've thought, wow, I wish I could have thought of this question, and I'm so glad that someone else did. And there are also questions which you think, wow, it's shocking to think how little someone knows about the Holocaust. But I think that's also something which is it makes me quite proud when you see a question of someone who really didn't know what Auschwitz was, and they're not doing this out of anti-Semitism or Holocaust denial. They really want to know what Auschwitz was. And that's what makes me proud, that we've taught people like that what the Holocaust was and what Auschwitz was. And that's something which I'm incredibly proud of, but also something which is quite shocking. In terms of questions which I'm kind of shocked at and surprised at, it's, again, hard to pinpoint exact ones, but there definitely have been those moments.
Have you been to Auschwitz?
I haven't yet. I've had 3 trips which were planned and cancelled because of COVID, but I will go when the time is right and with the right group and the right people.
Very good to talk to you, Dove. Thank you. Best of luck.
Likewise. Thank you very much.